FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop? Transformers, defenders of
truth, robots who fight in disguise. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 177, recorded November 13th, Friday the 13th, 2015. I am your host, Ron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Sunstreaker, a.k.a. Maroni Prime, a.k.a. Jim Black.
Hi!
All the way from the future, Hang Yip Chan from Australia.
Hi, everybody. From the future, it's really nice and sunny here.
It's not Philadelphia, but it's always sunny. In West Fennel, Philadelphia, he's born and raised on the playground.
You know, I'm from Philly.
I'm not black enough, man. I'm sorry.
Hey, that was a great show.
They're supposed to be remaking it.
Are they?
No.
Last I heard.
No. No.
And also, really from Philly, Rick Alvarez.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, hey, hey.
Was that a, it was like, hey?
Was hey. Like a... Hey. Well, this is Transformers for your listening pleasure. We talk about Transformers here. We are getting into the swing of this this Christmas spirit, so I want to give everybody a little preview of the next week's episode. The guys next week are planning on doing a holiday buying guide for Transformer fans. Really excited to do that, to listen to that. We did something like that year before last and last year, and seemed to be pretty successful. Some great stuff on there, some great tips. So hope those guys can help you guys out who are listening and watching the show find that great toy for a friend of yours, or maybe have your friend or wife watch the episode and give them and tell them, hey, these guys have some ideas. Listen to them. So check it out.
Big props.
Yes. We're also going to be talking in this episode about size classes. Size does matter. Yeah, that's what you But size classes such as you got your little Legion class guys, and you got your Deluxe Warrior class guys, you got your Leader, you got your Titans. We got all kinds of size classes, but it hasn't always been that way. So we're going to look at that a lot more in detail, talk about the roles that size classes played in the franchise throughout the years and everything. We got a few things that are newsworthy that we're going to talk about real quick. First of all, the BotCon brochure popped up online.
I'm famous.
Yes, our own Jim Black is in the brochure in full.
I still don't know you.
I'm sure that was by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. The very first picture in the brochure, I'm standing there as part of the cosplay contest as G1 Sparkplug. And even though it's too small to really make out, on the left side of my helmet is hashtag TFYLP.
Hmm.
So we have been advertised.
So if you are listening to TFYLP and you're on social media such as Twitter or Facebook, tweet us hashtag TFYLP and let us know that you're listening. Also, BotCon has given us some information about the show, stating, you know, some of the tours that's going on. I believe there's like a horse tour going on and also a caving tour, which is also really, really neat to do around these areas. There's lots of caves. Of course, about an hour and a half south of the Louisville area, you have one of the most famous caves in the world in Mammoth Cave. I actually went through it myself several months ago for probably the third or fourth time in my life, and it's always a really, really fun experience. So if you're into geology and just things like that and you're going to BotCon, highly recommend that. Check that out. There's other caverns and caves in the Louisville area that that may be part of the tour. Check that out as well. Then I believe there's some other things that they have going on, but we'll keep abreast on that. Also, there were some leaked images that popped up. Anybody have any thoughts on the leaked images of, say, Titan
Returns?
Well, first
of all, I don't know where they got those nude images of me.
Oh, so,
yeah. I'm
you know Rhett.
Right
that
there.
For my family's sake, that you please don't share those on social media.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, Rick, those images of you, you were really blocky. I don't know how you got that ripped, but bro, yeah, you've been eating those proteins and everything.
I thought for sure that was pixelation. He's actually shaped like that.
Yeah. But if you look really closely. If you look really, really closely, he has that peanuts syndrome. He's a blockhead, you know.
Oh, peanuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard something else.
Yeah, I know. That's what you heard. Yeah. Penish. Yeah.
That's not what she said.
Yeah. But anyway. Any of you guys have any comments on the leaked images of the Fortress Maximus from Titan's Return?
Oh, my God. I mean, there's not really a better way to put it. You know, I am so stoked for this figure. I was probably three and a half, not quite 4 years old when the original Fortress Maximus came out, and I only ever saw the original as a kid one time at a friend's house who then moved away 2 weeks later.
Wow.
So,
you know, the first thing that I noticed was that increased price point. What was Metroplex? 129 when it came out?
I don't remember.
This one's 179.
Of course, doesn't Fort Max come with more units?
Honestly, I think it is a. I think it's the image that we saw. My personal opinion is that since I believe Dave Chua is he works for Hasbro Asia. So I'm thinking this is a Hasbro Asia release, and that's a Hasbro Asia price. I could be wrong, but that's my speculation.
That makes sense.
Interesting theory. There is a lot of new tooling on it. And Toys R Us particularly has been a bit greedy lately with pricing.
Oh, really? Toys R Us?
So, I don't know, man. I wouldn't be surprised if it was really $179 at U.S. retail.
Here's a question, though. This Dave Chua guy, since this leak happened, does he still work for Hasbro Asia?
Well, just because it has his name on it doesn't mean that that he was the one that leaked the image. Yeah, somebody might have stolen
it. Might as well say from the desk of.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody left their browser open or something. You
know. Yeah, so I don't know if we can necessarily blame him for that, but.
Not so much placing blame as much as wondering if the guy still has a job after someone accessed his stuff.
And I must say, Jim, there is a really nice poster hanging up behind you.
There is. There's two of them.
Yeah, the other one.
Oh, but there's the Bumblebee one.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder where you got that.
I don't know. I think it might be some kind of TF Wild Pig exclusive.
No.
Limited run.
It's Capture Prey exclusive.
My mistake.
Which is a really disjointed segue into our sponsors. You know, we have a couple sponsors. Yes, we have a couple sponsors. CapturePrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more with the Capture Prey loyalty program. Save on all orders of $150 or more, and also get free shipping domestically on orders of $150 or more. So check out the loyalty program and everything at CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. I know that Masterpiece Tracks just went into stock, as well as some other great third-party items here recently. The Toy World Dinobots got restocked. Fans Toys Dinobots, most of them got restocked. So check those out. Also, our other sponsor, Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with MegaToyFan.com. Check them out at your most... at your biggest toy conventions year-round, such as BotCon and TFCon, great vintage toy collection or selection available. So check out Mega Toy Fan. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/mega.toyfan. So size classes. I know we kind of railroaded through some of the news there, but, you know, size classes, I think we got a lot to talk about here, honestly. So let's talk about the beginning of size classes. Generation 1 didn't really have size classes per se, but yet we had price points. Rick, you want to talk a little bit about the price points and the differences between price points and actual size classes, what it meant?
Yeah, so rather than create a line plan, what a line plan is it's saying how many figures you're going to release at XYZ prices. Stores today are so compartmentalized that their layout is done ahead of time. So, for example, Hasbro, they need to know that, hey, we're going to have a space for this many deluxe figures. We're going to have a space for this many Voyagers. We're going to have a space for this many leader class. So they try and cater their offering to those, to that space that's allocated to them in a brick and mortar store. Well, back a long time ago in the 80s, it wasn't really like that. There were price points instead of size classes that companies would try and hit. And you had a lot of figures in the smaller price points, but then you had your figures, like you had your Minibots, you had your Autobot cars, and then somewhere between like a Jetfire and an Omega Supreme, you had characters that were a Rodimus Prime or a Wreck-Gar. You had an Optimus Prime, and these are characters that kind of exist on their own price point, because at the time you really didn't have to plan on displaying your figures at a brick and mortar store the way you do today.
It was more or less whenever a brick-and-mortar store got them in, they were like, okay, where the hell are we going to put these?
Right. Right.
We're crammed full.
It provided a really, really good experience for us kids during that era because, I mean, walking onto a toy aisle that was like 80% Transformers on just one of the sides of the shelf. I mean, it was mind-blowing.
Right, and that's why you had a lot more, I would say, character size selection back then, because you were trying to hit certain price points that were $5 a part, $10 a part, $15 a part, Whereas today, it's very much set in stone. We're going to have a $9.99 figure. We're going to have a $12.99 figure, $20 figure. So we need to make the figures fit that price point rather than, hey, let's make a figure. And after it parts out, after the paint apps and the stickers, this figure is going to sell for $25. We have another figure. It's a little bit similar in size, but it has less parts. That one's going to price out a little bit cheaper. Now everything's made to fit that price point at that brick and mortar store.
I remember, like, the G1 Predacons were in a similarly sized box as, say, Rodimus Prime. But, you know, Rodimus Prime was, to my best recollection, $25, $25 to $30, depending on what store you went to. And the Predacons were right around $20 a piece, I believe, $15 to $20. So, you know, do you think that that would explain that? Is that the Predacons had maybe less parts or what?
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, you're not just trying to sell one Predacon. You're trying to sell five,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's better to keep them at that smaller price point where it may seem more affordable. Or look at it like this. All right, you can buy Rodimus for $25, right? And that's one figure. But for $15 more, you get two Predacons, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the marketing mentality that I think a lot of businesses had back in that time, even going far back as the 70s in the world of toys.
Now jumping from, say, 1985 to 2015, 30 years later, okay, do you think that it's better the way we do it now, or was it better then? I mean, I know as a kid it was great for us then, but I mean, you know, from a business standpoint and from a collector's standpoint, a fan standpoint, do you think it's better or worse now than it was then?
Well, personally, I think there's pros and cons to both, but I think it kind of hurts the market a little bit. I understand why they have to do it, but I think you're kind of limiting yourself as to how much intricacy your figures can have, how much paint your figures can have, by forcing it to hit a specific price point. And I hate having to put limitations on products like that. So I think it's hurt it as far as selection goes, but that's from a business standpoint, it makes a lot of sense to – you know you're only going to have so much space to display it, so you need to make your card backs this big. You need to make your Voyager boxes XYZ big and try to maximize the most out of the space that a brick-and-mortar store is going to allot to you.
I know a lot of people here a while back, we actually had an episode. I don't remember how many episodes ago it was, but we actually talked about the perception that the figures, say the deluxe figures, have shrunk even in the last 5 to 10 years. But whenever I held up a modern deluxe figure next to one from, say, RID in 2001, they were virtually the same size. They really haven't changed. It's just the size of the packaging and the way you perceive the toy.
Well, I think if you compare the size of your deluxe Beast Wars figures to Generations Deluxe, I think you see the size difference there. Beast Wars deluxes were just a little bit bigger, and Beast Wars is really when the whole size class first started to appear. You had your basic, which was like a rat trap, a pterosaur, and that was your small character. I think those might have even been like $7.99.
I'm cheating here. I've actually got TF Wiki pulled up right here, and cool. Beast Wars actually was the advent of designated size classes. And during Beast Wars, you had Basic, Deluxe, Mega, Ultra, and Super. Basics were the cheapest at $5. Deluxes were $10, Megas were $15, Ultras $20, and then Supers were $30.
That price point remained, I want to say, through RID. in 2001.
With the exception during Beast Machines, you had the Supreme size class, which was a $40 price point introduced, and the Deployers were also in there at the $5 price point, along with the basics.
Well, you also had that $40 price point in Beast Wars. Optimal Optimus came out. It was $40 at the time, and then he got reissued again at in R.I.D.
Was it R.I.D. or Beast Machines? Primal Prime, right?
Oh, yeah. Was it? No, it was...
it was Beast Machines. Beast Machines. Primal Prime. Target, I think.
Right.
At that, and was it Magmatron?
No.
Yeah,
well, Megatron wasn't exclusive, yeah, but he was part of the Dinobots line.
That's right.
Yeah. Now,
I've slept since then.
Interesting question here, and it's great to have an international member of the show to give us the perspective from non-U.S. based markets. Hang, what do you see as big a disparity between the shelf allotment for current figures as you did, say, years and years ago? Or is there any?
Well, I can't say for Singapore because I haven't been back for a while, but sorry, when I moved to Australia was the time Armada came out, and Armada got a lot of space in shops, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Like there was so much shelf warmers, it's not even funny. Whereas now when you look at it, you'll see still a lot of movie stuff from AOE combined with Combiner Wars and RID, the new RID, and you'll get, depending on the stores, like say Target or Kmart, you'll get Rescue Bots. I think that's the kids one. The Rescue Bots, mm-hmm. almost in the same area, so they're not given much shelf space at all, actually.
Mm.
Like there's more space given up to, say, My Little Pony, Star Wars, which is because it's got the new movie coming out, all that space has gone to them. You look at stuff like Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles gets a lot of space. At one point, Ben 10 literally took an entire aisle on its own.
Wow.
Transformers is literally, I don't know, like dying. Like, the movie toys don't sell very well. Really, and yeah. Really, when you look at it, it's just the older collectors that really buy the stuff now. Kids don't really look at Transformers.
Which is sad, you know, but the thing is do you see, listening to what we've been talking about and seeing how size classes apply, you know, why we have size classes now, because you have stores here in the U.S., and I assume Canada's, it applies as well, have, you know, you have an allotted space, say a 4-foot section of a shelf, which my Walmart completely ignores. They just stock it however the hell they want. But, you know, you got a 4-foot allotment, and that's where your deluxes and stuff are supposed to go. Do you see that same trend overseas? Or is, like you say, it's just they expand it out however they feel?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's 4-foot allotments. It's obviously given a small space, depending on the stores, and I think it's depending on how popular a toy line goes. You'll see a larger area, say, for Ninja Turtles, for their vehicles, their figures, and everything, than compared to Transformers, which would just be all your deluxes, a few Voyagers, heaps of Legends, because Legends seem to sell quite well, I think, here. And then you get your Rescue Bots, you get whatever's shoved in between. Sometimes you get on the same spot, you get RID and Combiner Wars because they've just had to stick everything into one area.
Yeah.
There's no real control.
Basically, it's up to the stores, however they want to do it then.
What sells better is what gets more shelf space.
And, you know, I mean, it's an entire discussion in and of itself, you know, whenever you say, you know, Transformers just isn't getting the love as some of these other lines. You know, as a Transformer fan, that I find that really disparaging and disconcerting. But at the same time, you know, it's a real observation. You know, it's a discussion in and of itself, but I hate hearing that, especially overseas, where I know for years it seems like Transformers seems to have been carried. It has carried the brand, it seems like, overseas.
Well, no, that's the thing, though. It's maybe not so much the fault of Transformers' popularity as the way Hasbro Australia has been putting out the products here. We literally skipped entire line, like waves of generations at one point. Combiner Wars Wave 2 only turned up after Wave 4 came out here.
Wow.
Like, we had Wave 1, went to 3, and then 4 and 2 kind of turned up at the same time.
Now, that sounds very reminiscent of from some of the people that we've talked to that live in the UK back in Generation 1. It's like some figures would be widely released and widely available here in the States, and they wouldn't even get them in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just kind of wonder if it's mainly, I guess, because of botched distribution. I don't know, or I don't know how that works.
I guess it's dependent on where the Hasbro in that country, how they work it. Because
yeah.
In Singapore, which is technically part of the Southeast Asia Hasbro section, marketing section, they get all the Asian stuff that goes to Hong Kong, you know? Like, every now and then I get photos from my friends go, hey, I've got this. Have you got it? I was like, I hate you so much. I will have my vengeance.
So basically, like the Hasbro Asia releases, you get as well in Australia.
Depends. I think they're trying to push Asian releases, but translate it into English packaging. So we picked up Masterpiece Star Saver, Toys R Us exclusive.
Mm.
Which had all his instructions translated to English. But the instructions was based closer to the IDW version of Star Saber, you know, maniacal swordsman who kills a lot of people. The problem being is that he's $300 Aussie, just a lot of money to pay for an MP, let's be serious.
But he is a very nice MP.
And then, you know, Devastator's initial price here is going to be $195, which is great. Like $195 for Devastator is pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm. But that was the initial release. And if you go to Toys R Us now, chances are he's close to $300.
What, for Devastator or?
Yeah, for Devastator. Yeah. And Trypticon? Trypticon's being priced at $300. The platinum release. I have a better chance of just buying the original.
Yeah. Yeah, I started to think for those prices, you could just go get a nice complete original for $300. You know.
Yeah. Why would I pay that price for the platinum? Like, I might as well go search the original. As it is, there's some inside talk that the platinum is based off the Gigastorm version rather than the Trypticon version.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What was that noise?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Quit playing with yourself. Damn. Okay, let's get back on the topic here. Generation 2 pretty much did not have size classes either. It had price points, even though much like Generation 1 did. Like we said, it kind of really didn't get into the designated classes until Beast Wars. Now, whenever we got to Beast Machines, like I said earlier, we got the Supreme class, Supreme Optimus Primal, had the electronic sounds from Gary Chalk. And then in Robots in Disguise, we had the basic price point was lowered to $5. I don't recall. Was Beast Machines, was it raised?
Beast Machines, I think, was pretty much about the same. Maybe a little different. I want to say things like Tank Drone, Silver Bolt, you know, those basics.
Seems like I recall.
Honestly, they were like $6.99 or so on those. And then the larger ones, like, I don't know, Rat Trap or Black Arachnia, I think those were still about around the $10 price point. I don't think they went up too.
Well, as an adult collector, that's around the time that I got back into Transformers. I collected during the entire run of Generation 1, and then I put my toys away, discovered girls, and then got married, and then around the end of 98, early 99, I rediscovered Transformers, and I started actually buying toys at, you could still find, it was at that moment when you could find the Fox Kids repaints of Beast Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And,
like 1999.
Yeah. You could find the Fox Kids repaints of Beast Wars and then Beast Machines on the shelf at the same time. And that's around the time I started actually purchasing Transformers again as an adult. And I seem to recall, Beast Machines having like that $6 to $7 price point for...
What would have been the basics?
I think it was the basics. And then Deluxes were right around $10.
But didn't we get the Supreme? What was it? Supreme Cheetah and Supreme whatever that bat is?
Nightscream and
Nightscream was
Ultra. Nightscream was an Ultra, yeah. So he was like Ultra. The same as that big Jetstorm.
Him and Jetstorm, yeah.
And
Jetstorm was good.
There was the other things. They weren't the deployers, but they were the battle chargers. Was that what they were called?
Yeah.
The vehicles that they were supposed to ride on.
Beast Riders.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I forgot about them.
I've never seen them before, to tell you the truth. They never got released in Singapore when I was watching Beast Machines. So I have no idea what they look like. And I don't want to know.
They look terrible, so don't
look like Pokeballs or something like that.
Yeah. Then we move on to Robots in Disguise. I know we had the, let's see here, Robots in Disguise had the three mega price multi-packs.
So let's talk about Robots in Disguise real quick.
Yes. Okay. Please do.
This was the line that was developed for the Japanese market and then brought over to North America. All right, so the Japanese market is very different in that they don't necessarily follow the same ideology as far as price points that North America does. So they will have all sorts of sizes, like kind of how you did in the 80s. And Robots in Disguise reciprocated that, where it was kind of like the 80s all over again, where you have your Optimus Prime and your Ultra Magnus, and those were at a set price point. Your Scourge was at a different price point, and then you had your Deluxe Car Brothers, and then they were grouped together with the Constructobots,
the build team were Deluxe, the Car right. Brothers.
But then you had like your weird scale Voyagers, which were like the trains. But then because they didn't have that basic toy, they kind of lumped the three basic toys that were repaints of Transmetal Beast Wars characters into a Voyager at that point. Or a mega.
I actually like that, though. I felt like I was getting more bang for my buck whenever I did that.
The point is that Hasbro did a lot to try and make that line fit their ideology. So that's an example of how they did that, by taking those three characters and putting them together in one of those mega boxes. And then trying to take, what we would call basic figures from Machine Wars and lump them together to make a deluxe toy to add more variety to their planogram.
Well, as far as basics and Robots in Disguise, that was kind of a hodgepodge catch-all size class, because you think about it, in that size class alone, you had two packs of the Spike Changer cars, Wars and Crosswise, Hotspot and Rev, Ironhide and Mirage. At the same time, in that same price point, you also had individually packed G1 Constructicon molds, the Decepticons that built Ruination, and their weaponry in there as well.
Right.
Then you end up with a little bit larger scale figures like Obsidian from Beast Machines, that repaint. And so if you get into like the Predacon trio, I think honestly, they were because of their beast features and their like wings and tails and crap. They were probably a little bit too big for those basic cards, but not big enough to qualify for a deluxe. That'd be my guess. That's probably why they probably lumped them into the three-pack like you were talking about.
Yeah, it's hard to say. There really wasn't anyone around from that time period still in the marketing department while I was there. Right. So that was never really something that came up.
Yeah, those bubbles weren't really all that big. In the grand scheme of things, I mean, the plastic bubble took up most of the card. So.
Yeah. Well,
because you have to imagine. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Because you have to imagine that in Japan, the way they packaged everything was quite different. They had like boxes for even the deluxe figures instead of being on cards. And when we hit Car Robot, which is RID, you had the spy changes sold individually. Mm-hmm. On cards or combined in a six pack, depending on how you wanted to get them. And like Rick says, it's just the Japanese have a totally different concept of it. Like Car Robot was meant to be selling a lot of repaints when you think about it, repaints that didn't make it to Japan. And so, well, except for maybe Devasta and Black Convoy. Yeah, Black Convoy. Those were the only two that I think actually made it to Japan in some form prior. All the other repainted molds actually never made it to Japan. So I think it was just a way to use up old molds that were just sitting around and adding new molds to it eventually. And so that's why, and always the Japanese have always had a very different way of selling their stuff anyway.
And I, you know, you bring up a good point where like you look at Beast Wars and how they offered that you could buy the figures individually or you could buy a Versus set. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something that's typically offered here, except as like an exclusive somewhere, and it might come with like a repaint.
Didn't they do a Battle of City Ultra Magnus versus Skywarp? The only way you could get a Skywarp at that time.
Yeah.
Actually, it's the only way to get a Skywarp for generations still.
Yeah, that was the only way to get in the Skywarp ass. And that white Ultra Magnus at the time, and they've since come out. I think just because, you know, that's kind of leaving money on the table to not put those two out, but.
Well, as far as the Japanese market, didn't the Ultra Magnus get released in a two-pack along with Optimus? And then I think it was like Grimlock and Jetfire together?
That was an Asian one. That wasn't a Japan one. I think that was Asia Hong Kong.
Okay.
Released a Jetfire and Grimlock, I think. An Optimus Prime with Ultra Magnus. And that was the only other way to get that Ultra Magnus. But at that time, I was like, I really want a Skywarp. I need to wait it out.
I got to say, of all the things that they could have done, putting Grimlock and Jetfire in a box together was an amazing idea. Because it's like the Gary Chalk gifts, or not Gary Chalk, Greg Berger gift set.
Well, no, wasn't it because at that time the Dreamwave comics had Jetfire and Grimlock like arguing with each other or something like that at that point?
Did it?
It was in the War Within storyline. I think it was in the
second. Oh, yeah, I didn't get that far. I stopped when Superion exploded. That kind of. I was sad. I had a sad.
I feel your pain. I feel your pain. Anyway, going back to sizes.
Yeah. Now, it's also important to know, like Rick said, you know, sometimes it was they like the deluxes. They would take two Machine Wars deluxes and pair them together to two Machine Wars basics, pair them together to make a deluxe. For example, the Bullet Trains were individually packed here in the United States as Megas, even though they were I'm reading here on the TF Wiki, they were actually smaller than other figures in that size class.
They were.
I think that's one of the things that appeals to me about Team Bullet Train is that they were deceptively compact. I mean, they mass shifted more than any other toy, I think, of that era, because you had this small little train that's literally maybe about that long, and then it turns into this robot that's a lot bigger than the small little train that it was. And then it combines into this combiner that is, it's really big. I mean, I just love the mass shifting effect that Team Bullet Train had. And I think that's one of the things that has been, the magic has been lost over the years. I mean, I really don't see anything really coming close to that kind of mass shift anymore, really. Do you guys agree?
Well, I think you're kind of starting to get into like a story aspect where I think storytellers nowadays are looking for things that are more real world based, and even though they're giant transforming robots from outer space, it's still hard to process that mass shifting effect sometimes as a child, unless you see it over and over and over again, like with a Soundwave or a Megatron. And I don't think there's characters who can be lead characters who could have that effect nowadays. It's really a supporting character thing, and supporting characters, honestly, how often are you going to see them in animation or entertainment?
Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry. But
go ahead. No.
I was just going to mention about the Bullet Train, since you were bringing up their space, is by design, they are some of the greatest, in my opinion, some of the greatest Transformers we've ever received in a main line. There's almost no wasted space. There's a purpose for every piece. The missiles and the guns and weapons, they have places to store. There are functions for them that they can be used to interlink the train cars together and form a larger train. I mean, arms and legs tuck in different ways where they're, like I said, there's literally no wasted space. Like we've got the issue with the hollowness and Combiner Wars here. You didn't have that with the Bullet Trains. They were an amazing design in that regard.
Well, it's also important to note too that on that same line of thinking, it's also important to note too. It seems like, was it here a few years ago at BotCon, somebody asked about a reissue of Team Bullet Train, or maybe bringing them back some way, and they just can't be. It was stated that they just can't be released here in the United States again because they can't be sold at the same kind of price point that they were back in 2001. At the mega price point, the parts count, it just doesn't financially work out anymore.
Cost prohibitive.
Yeah, that's true.
Do a box set.
You know, here's something that you, Jim, you kind of bring something up that I think applies to the conversation, where with the Bullet Trains, everything would be compact and hidden. With G1, you'd always have these leftover parts. You know, you'd have missiles or landing gear. Yeah, you'd have all this extra plastic. So do you guys think having those weapons that form fit inside of a figure, do you think that is hindering the price points? Or do you think they should just move on and tack it to the side like they kind of do with RID and with Transformers Prime? What do you think is better, and what do you think?
I like the tuck-away. I like the tuck-away weapons.
Yeah, it helps to have a car that doesn't have a giant robot fist hanging off the top of it. some other ridiculous aspect. I think it's essential, so long as it doesn't inhibit the main toy itself in any essential capacity. Like, you can't have an accessory that, it stores away in car mode, but when it's in wrong mode, it all of a sudden forms, the right half of the torso, or something like that. I mean,
here's a good example of that. For our audio listeners, I'm holding up RID 2015 Warrior Class. This is a Toys R Us.
E-mob.
This is a Toys R Us version of Sideswipe from RID 2015. Yes, and he is holding a B-Mog. So there's a plug for Trent Truth there. But notice I've got his sword stored away. I don't know if it was intended to be like a holster back here, but right behind his head, there's a little notch that his sword fits perfectly in, which is great in robot mode. But in car mode, you basically take the sword and it clips to the top, and he's got like a lance that goes out from the top. Me personally, I think that looks stupid. I don't like it.
Is there no place on the underside?
You can tuck it underneath between a couple of the ridges. Although I don't think it was intended to be a storage place, but it does store away on that figure. But so many figures today doesn't have that tuck away feature. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, many Combiner Wars figures take their the foot pad slash foot slash missile, and it just attaches in vehicle form, and it's like this big giant bulky thing that's attached to it. Yep. And
with that, I kind of give that a pass because it's part of a gimmick that figure has and shares with other figures. But for like a regular deluxe or a regular mega, I think I'd rather see the engineering where everything just kind of tucks away. And, you know, we had that in Beast Wars. We had that in Beast Machines and R.I.D. And it seems they've kind of gotten away from it. I really can't explain why. Maybe it's to make it more exciting in the packaging. Maybe it's to make it more exciting in vehicle mode, that they think they need that extra bit of kibble on the outside to show some action to the kids.
Maybe it's just hard to design a vehicle that allows everything to form in. Like with Beast Wars, we had a lot of kibble that could cover where the weapons were. And I don't even remember Beast Machines ever doing that because you didn't have to. Like, personally, if it's a realistic vehicle, G1 style, I would prefer it to have its weapons hidden, like, say, Drift. Drift did a fairly good job of actually doing that. Mm-hmm. But if you have a futuristic vehicle, like, say, the Fall of Cybertron stuff, I don't care if there's a gigantic cannon sitting on top of it, because it's a futuristic space vehicle. I've got no point of reference for it.
Yeah. And Jim is actually holding up Fall of Cybertron Prime right there.
Which is a problem I had with the Prime toys. I think that was an issue I had with some of the Prime toys, is the fact that I had weapons like sitting around because I couldn't actually put them away unless they were in robot mode. Except for maybe the Vehicons. I think the Vehicons were fantastic in that sense. You could keep everything aside, but most of the other figures you had to have their weapons sticking to the side of them.
The thing is that I'm one of the people that is a fan of the RID toys. I mean, I'm sorry, not the R. Well, I do love RID, but Transformers Prime. I love the Prime toys for the aesthetic and I'm of the G1 aesthetic. If it doesn't fit in vehicle mode, toss that weapon aside. You know, I mean, it just goes off to the side. You know, but. There were a few that it didn't look bad. For example, RC, I believe the RID RC and Transformers Prime. I like the blades that kind of stuck to the sides. It seemed to blend in with the aesthetic of the motorcycle, mm-hmm. And to where it wasn't intrusive to the vehicle form. Whereas, you know, like this sideswipe that I was talking about earlier, you got this neat looking car, and then you have a sword attached to the top of it that it sticks out like a sore thumb. You know, if you're going to have a weapon, either have it overtly a weapon in a functional way in the vehicle form, or tuck that thing away and to where it doesn't intrude on the looks of the toy.
A couple of cases I can think of where that worked actually pretty well. One is the off-road and Ironhide mold for Combiner Wars.
Yes, yes.
Where the fist foot pad missile thing goes on the back, similar to like some kind of camper, almost like Trailbreaker. And then the breakdown Sunstreaker mold here which can also store in robot mode. To I don't know if many viewers knew that.
The need for vacuum metalized chrome. Yeah,
but it also fits on the top of the vehicle mode for Sun Streaker anyway, in a way that harkens back to the original without being too distracting.
Yeah.
Breakdown, I mean, not so much, but...
It has, some of them has a function, I agree. But then you have some that it, so, for example, Combiner Wars Prowl. I love that shotgun that he has in robot form. But in vehicle form, there's really nothing that you can do with it that makes any kind of sense. And I mean, yeah, there's a little peg hole at the top. You got a car with a big old shotgun attached to the top of it. I'm not a fan of that.
I can't remember if it was Toy Fair or if it was a BotCon, but the first time the Transformers Prime Deluxe Wheeljack got shown, and that picture comes up of the car with the two swords just sticking out from the front bumper. That was like everyone just kind of chuckled, and then remember even the people at Hasbro were like, yeah.
It looks kind of goofy. But that is actually one of the gems of that line. I love that mold. That is a great mold. Especially the Dead End. I love that screaming face he's got. But we digress. Anyway, also before we move on to Armada, I want to all of our listeners, if you have a Twitter account and you have any comments or questions, you can tweet us at TFYLP. I'm watching the Twitter feed right now, so if you have any comments or questions on what we're talking about on the show, tweet us at TFYLP, and your comment or question may be read here on air as we are live. In the interest of keeping the video feed good and smooth, I don't have the YouTube channel pulled up, so I can't monitor the YouTube comments as they come in. Sometimes I get to those later after we air. So if you're asking questions on the YouTube channel and your questions or comments doesn't get mentioned, that's why. Just any interest of keeping it smooth and flowing on here. But tweet us at TFYLP or post them in our Facebook group on Facebook, the TFYLP Facebook group. We're watching that as well. I asked a question earlier today. What is your favorite size class in the Transformers franchise and why? At Jetfire 2009 tweeted, at TFYLP, deluxe class is just under $20 and it doesn't take up that much shelf space, but can still be engineered to be fun and transform in a fun way. I agree. Deluxe class is a really great one, but the fan in me is absolutely giddy over Titan class. You got this big honking toy that, you know, little Timmy and his mom is gonna balk at. But me as an adult collector with an occasional throwaway income, yeah, the Devastator, the Metroplex, yeah, oh yeah, I'm going for that. Yeah.
See, I thought you would have said, Masterpiece.
Little Jimmy, yeah. Masterpiece? Yeah, yeah, well, that's, you know, I want to get to Masterpiece a little bit later on, because Masterpiece is a whole beast in and of itself.
No, not till next year.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually are. I see what you did there. Whereas Masterpiece doesn't really seem to have a designated size class. Not anymore. But
to begin with?
Well, I think, you want to just jump into Masterpiece at this point?
Sure. Let's go ahead and talk about Masterpiece, since it is kind of separate.
Yeah, Masterpiece started with Optimus Prime. And we really don't know if there was more planned beyond Optimus. But eventually more figures came, right? And we had Ultra Magnus, which was just a redeco of Optimus Prime. We had Starscream, and Starscream was kind of built to be, I think, in that same price point as Optimus. Same with Megatron. You know, you look at the box sizes. I think they were all trying to be in that same price point. I don't think it was really until MP10 started when Takara, Hasbro said, we can make these in different price points. We can make these in different sizes. It's okay to make a, you know, a Bumblebee. It's okay to make the cars. And look, you look at the cars now, you have Ironhide, who's much bigger than, say, Trax, who's a little bit taller than Smokescreen, Prowl, and those guys, and Red Alert, and Sideswipe. So I think Masterpiece has just evolved over the last... Has it been 10 years?
2004 is, yeah. I believe, when it came out. Masterpiece so, Convoy and Masterpiece Optimus Prime.
So 10 years, here we are, and it took a while, but we finally got to a place where we can have different Masterpiece at different levels, different price points. And I think that has really just made the line pop. It's going to... I think it's reinvigorated Masterpiece, and I think Masterpiece will continue for a very long time.
Hope so.
And it'll be interesting to see 10, 20 years from now where Masterpiece is, where, you know, what characters are they making? Is it going to be...
Masterpiece, Armada, Laserbeak?
That's what, well, I'm thinking, you know, is it going to be Masterpiece, Armada, Optimus Prime 10, 15 years from now? Is that what we're going to see?
Is the trailer still going to transform via laser signal?
It'll still become the pants.
It'll probably be Bluetooth.
God, I hated that toy.
It was super, great. What's wrong with that?
Super Pants Optimus Prime. I hated that from Armada.
Yes. All plastic.
Once that thing falls apart, it's so hard to get that trailer and all the little gears back together again.
Mm-hmm.
I got everything back together. I played with that thing heaps when I first moved to Australia because it was the first. Because Armada was coming out in Australia when it came out, and I played the crap out of that toy. Like, I guess the wires in the arms were a bit of a problem, so that's why I bought the Japanese version. But, you know, damn, it was a good... I had lots of fun.
I liked the cab. I did. The cab was nice. But that trailer was... I'm sorry, pardon my French, it was shit. I hated that thing. That thing was a piece of shit. But my comments on the Masterpiece thing Masterpiece now is more, it's not necessarily size class, it's more of scale. I think scale is more important, and I know everybody says, oh, what, Transformers and scale?
Well,
but Masterpiece is more for that, you know, okay, this guy is supposed to be bigger than this guy. You know, it seems to adhere to scale more than anything, any other Transformer line in history, in my opinion.
And that's very true. So, you know, I think it is about scale, but I think it's also... you know, ingenuity is a very big part of it as well, of what makes a Masterpiece toy.
Yeah.
And it used to be die-cast metal was another signature trait of Masterpiece. And
the Lost Art.
Yeah, that kind of seems to have gone by the wayside, unfortunately.
Yeah. I do love die-cast in my toys. I understand that over time it can wear out plastic. But honestly... Even though I do transform my toys, you know, somewhat frequently, I'll be honest, I don't transform them enough to wear them out. And so as a collector, you know, if someone were to buy a transformer from me, let's say one of these that's in my cabinet back here right now, more than likely I've transformed it 10 or less times. And that's not saying that I don't like the toy or anything like that. It's just that I appreciate the toy. I transform it from time to time, but I'm not one that just gets out and fiddle with. I do have some that I fiddle with, you know, that I keep here on my desk. You know, this thing here, I probably converted. I'm probably going to wear this sucker out. But then I do do odd things like that with it, you know, but but you know, they, I I totally lost my train of thought here. But getting back to masterpieces, I get what you're saying. Diecast metal is a lost art. I know Optimus Primal said that, and it does ring true today. I wish there was more diecast in there. It made me happy that Masterpiece Ultra Magnus actually had some diecast, but I think it was more or less in there for functionality rather than aesthetic. And also, I also lump vacuum metalized chrome in there with diecast, because well placed vacuum metalized chrome is, I think, essential to making a toy look great. A good example, Combiner Wars Sunstreaker. He looks great with that weapon on his on the back that's just painted silver. But it would look even better to me if it were vacuum metalized chrome. I understand that there's a reason that it's not, because it would look silly. It's like whatever combiner he would be a part of would have like this one chrome hand or one chrome foot. So I get it, but I think it'd be nice if he had like a chrome weapon attachment. Well,
I've been messing with this thing for like an hour, and I did not even realize that. So you mentioned it.
Yeah.
It's not like a shiny chrome, like a Jetfire or Beast Machine.
It's not chrome. It's Jetstorm. It's silver paint.
But it's still, I did not realize this was painted.
Yeah.
That's going to throw off my group. The same color?
That is really going to throw off my group now.
Hmm.
But what do you notice from the same way
and
do that?
That's why you paint it. Okay, go ahead, Hing. I'm sorry. You were kind of lagging there.
I'm saying that would the other the ones in his wave have the same painted limbs? I mean, painted fists and legs, I guess.
I don't know. I hope they match.
James,
no, it could be whatever. Sorry.
James Galtier, listener of the podcast, he just posted on Facebook. His favorite size class has always been the Beast Wars Basic. Most of the time, if you got a nice, well-articulated bot with the internal weapon storage for $5, it only took a few chores to get one, and the weapons were concealed, not just pinned on the animal weirdly like most vehicle formers. And most of the time, simple transformation flip for those kids that always needed help. That's why I think that's one of the things I like about this one-step Grimlock here, is it's just got that flip former type gimmick, but... But yeah, that's a good point there. You guys have any comments on that?
Well, I think Masterpiece has been covered thoroughly. I'm excited to see where Masterpiece goes, especially with that Optimus Primal coming out.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I'm anticipating a Megatron.
Yeah, I'm with you. If we get a Beast Convoy, I certainly hope we at least get a Megatron to go with it. It just wouldn't seem right if he was by himself. Let's get back to, go ahead.
Well, just real quick. You think about their market over there, and a lot of times, you see these Power Rangers where villains are just not produced. So, something inside me says, don't hold my breath for a Megatron. I think it would be more likely that we would see a lot more convoys from throughout the ages than do like a good guy versus bad guy.
Well, we have MP10, we have Star Saber, now we have Beast Convoy, yeah, and we have the Rodimus Prime. What would be next? Armada Prime.
Neo Convoy.
Yeah,
you get Leo Convoy,
Power Master.
Wasn't there
Masterpiece Power Master Optimus Prime? Wow.
The Nerd Master was voted really high.
My mind.
What's that, Hank?
Because I remember there was a Japanese vote, not the same as the Star Saber one, but I think God Jinrai actually came up on top of that one.
Really?
It was in one of the Generation books. Like, they mentioned that he is voted out, like, the next popular figure to be on MP.
Just Jinrai or God Jinrai?
God Jinrai.
So the full thing.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's... But I mean, even if you said that, there's a good chance you'll get Super Jinrai first and hopefully God Bomber later. Because as it is, you can kind of loosely put Victory Leo onto MP Star Saber. So maybe there's going to be a Victory NP Victory Leo in the future.
I hope so. That would be so awesome. Now, getting back to the size classes, we briefly touched on Armada. Essentially, what happened during Armada was a renaming of the science classes to kind of match the line. Even though they typically stayed pretty much the same, the only one that they kind of did away with was the Megas. They kind of did away with the Mega.
MaxCon.
Yeah. MaxCon was more of, I guess, of what would eventually be Voyagers. Mm-hmm. You had Minicon, Supercon, which is essentially deluxe, MaxCon, yeah, which was, Ultras, and then the GigaCons, which I guess, what would that be now? Voyager, I guess, maybe.
Well, one was Voyager and one was Ultra.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then you had the Super Base piece of shit Prime.
The Unicron, but I don't remember if he was a class or if he was just Unicron.
Yeah.
Wasn't he called Unicron class?
Yeah, Unicron had his own class, wasn't it?
Was it Supreme or was it... I thought he was called Unicron class.
I thought he was Supreme. I could be wrong. Well, yes, according to TF Wiki, Unicron was in his own class using the Supreme size. So, yeah, he was in his own class, Unicron class.
He got kicked out of class and I sit in the corner for myself.
Hmm.
And it's not because he was born with only one cron either.
Yeah. Alternators, basically one size class fits all.
124 scale, if I remember right.
Yeah, actually, going back to what I mentioned with the Masterpiece, how scale seems to be more the motif with Masterpiece rather than size class, Alternators, I guess, kind of did it first, didn't they? What came first, Alternators or MP?
Alternators.
Alternators was 2004 as well.
No, Optimus. No, so MP Convoy, MP01 Convoy came out first. And that's why there was that joke that the Alternators was scaled to him.
As I recall, it was, I'm pretty sure, maybe San Diego Comic-Con or one of the Tokyo Toy Shows or something that actually debuted the prototypes for Masterpiece Convoy and Alternator Smokescreen at the same time.
But I think I'm almost 100% sure that MP01 came out before Binotech Smokescreen.
Because as far as actual retail release, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, in Japan, that was how it went.
Yeah.
Incidentally, MP01 was the first time I had first and one of the few times I actually got a new Transformer and had it overnighted from Japan to me.
Overnight?
Yeah. I was one of those idiots that paid. I think it was Hobby Link Japan or somewhere. It was one of the first times I ever bought from them, and I actually paid like $50 or $60. I paid like $200 for this thing just to get it. I wanted it in hand like now. I mean, so that was one of the very few times I actually did that. I mean, I know it was very stupid with my money, but when you want something so badly, you'll throw money at it that bad. But in retrospect, should I have done that? Probably not. But
Think about the excitement that piece created inside of you,
mm-hmm,
right? And how it probably, you were already back in the Transformers, but it rekindled it even more. And I think that's why MP10 came out, to get people who maybe fell off the bandwagon a little bit, get them back on board, but to get new people back on board too. So I think it's probable that at some point we'll get another Optimus Prime masterpiece in some way or some form.
Ultimate masterpiece.
Well, I thought MP10 was released because they wanted the later MPs that they were doing with the deluxe cars to be more in scale, because the deluxe cars would be tiny next to MP01.
Yeah.
personally. That's what I thought.
MP01 came about mostly because they wanted to do another Optimus. Because I think they had pretty much gone through all the versions of that Optimus that they could have gone through at retail. And he is a popular character, so that's from what I remember from being at the Big H.
Is that mold even still around, or is it just like destroyed? I know they used it to death.
I'm sure MP10 is around. MP1, I don't know. It's possible maybe they went back and rebuilt it for some of the later reissues. I know they did that with the Generations Starscream mold. That seeker that's been redone a million times. They went back and created a new mold for that because it's just been used to death.
Yeah.
I know RID, Optimus, and Ultra Magnus are gone.
The Car Brothers.
Yeah, and I don't know about the Car Brothers, but I know all the Minicons that came in the 3-packs are gone. Those got used to death.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but a lot of the Beast Wars stuff was still there, and a lot of the Beast Machine figures were still around. There are a couple missing here and there. Leo Convoy, Galvatron from Beast Wars 2. Those were missing in action, unfortunately.
That's a little tangent. I have a question. Talk about missing in action molds. How does that happen? How do you lose a mold? Now, I have a theory, and I want to throw it out there and see if I'm right. Now, there's not a one single factory that makes every Transformer. It's Transformers are actually produced across multiple factories. And what I'm assuming that Hasbro or Takara or both actually signs a contract with a factory to produce these toys for X amount of time. And then after that contract is up, they don't produce anymore, and the molds stay with that factory, and maybe they fall out of contact with that factory and the molds just get lost or sold?
No, it's nothing like that. The molds usually, when you pay for a mold, it also includes like a storage fee when you pay for a mold, and they keep that on hand. They're supposed to keep a library of it to make sure that if you ever need to go back and make some more, that you can. The factory wants you to go back and make more. They want to get as much business from you as they can. So they want to. They're very good at storing these molds. When something goes missing, it's typically because it got pulled for like a special edition run, and then it either got mislabeled and not put right, and not put back into the same place, and you have to. To find it, you have to literally go and examine each mold visually by hand to try and find it. I know they had to do that for the Big Convoy when it was used as Ultra Magnus for the Collector's Club, because that mold was missing, and then eventually they came back saying they found it buried away somewhere. But
Nemesis Prime, I think, was the time prior to that.
Yeah, there was a time, I think it was for the first or second BotCon with Fun Pub, where we wanted to take that Beast Wars Neo Galvatron and make a Thunderwing out of it. We just couldn't find the mold, unfortunately.
Wow, that's a stretch for that mold. But, I mean, I can see it, but, you know.
Got the teeth, anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see it in the robot form. It's just the dragon form kind of throws me. But
yeah.
But hey, okay, Energon. We bring in other size classes again. It seems like they've renamed the size classes. You know, you got your Energon, which is basic, Combat Deluxe, Mega Combat, which was the Max Con before, Commanders, which was Giga Con. And the introduction of Leaders, the Leader class, came in Energon. So that's where we can attribute that. Unicron was, again, given no size class. It was just class in and of itself. Let's see here. Then you have...
In Energon, we also have the Omega Supreme and the and his repaint. Omega Sentinel, right? So there wasn't a designation for those?
No, Omega
Supreme. No, they had no class.
Yeah, no
class. They were Unicron class, I think.
Yeah. That was, let's see here. Also, the, let's see here. It was actually listed as Omega Supreme as Supreme class. So, yeah. Then in Cybertron, I guess is the first time we had anything that was actually referred to as a legend.
Yes.
In the Legends of Cybertron.
Yes.
That was the mainly, basically these little bitty guys here, top size. Which, you know, I am a big fan of these small guys. I mean, they may not be the most posable, but whenever you don't want to spend a good chunk of your paycheck, or you can't spend a good chunk of your paycheck, it's nice to have that there's a $5 figure that you can go and grab and still get a little enjoyment out of. I have to say, this the RID2 Bumblebee is surprisingly complex for its size. I was actually amazed by it. But yeah, Cybertron's the first time we saw the Legends class. The Minicon class came back. Scout class came about in Cybertron. Now the Scout class.
Essentially basic.
Yeah.
Well, didn't we have a Scout class in Energon as well?
It was called the Combat class.
Combat.
No, I'm sorry, Energon class. My bad.
Yeah, but that was done like Sky Blast and
Right.
Rabbit. Yeah.
Strong arm.
Now the Scout class, as it is called, the Scout class actually came about in Cybertron. Now, what role? Now that we've got to more of a modern type role of each of these size classes. You've got your Legends, you've got your Scout size, you got your Deluxes, Voyagers, Voyager class also came about in Cybertron, as did Ultra, came back, Leader class, and then Supreme. What, in your opinion, is the most important size class, Rick?
For me, I think it's Voyager. It's the class I like the most. I also like a lot of 6-inch action figures, so that's a good figure size that sits next to my He-Man figures or my Black Series figures. It's got a good weight to it. I think it's at that sweet price point where you can get it, and I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off.
Don't feel guilty spending too much.
Yeah, when I buy a deluxe figure now, I kind of feel like I'm overpaying for this. Because I think back to Beast Wars, because I'm an old guy. I think back to Beast Wars and how big they were there. But when I pay for that Voyager, I feel pretty content with what I'm buying. It's a good size. It's a good weight. It's a pretty good transformation. And the posability is there, and I think it looks good on my shelf next to other figures.
Okay, Tim, what is the most important size class and why to you?
Well, they each bring their own thing to the table that's unique unto them that kind of makes it hard to compare one to the other. They're all each of them good for different reasons. I did want to say one thing though about Legends. When those first started in Transformers Cybertron, before I had actually seen them in person or anything, I just saw pictures on the TransFandom and on TFW and things like that. I was under the impression it was some kind of like commemorative collector thing where you could take and you could just get all the different characters and like a diorama or something, and it was some special thing for collectors. But as I actually got a few of them and saw them, I saw that they were just those regular characters, but simplified, almost like mini cons. They turned out to be really successful, really collectible to many who wanted those larger characters, but couldn't afford the larger price point. And I think that's part of what helped it really take off. And it's popular even to this day. You walk into Dollar General and Family Dollar and all these other places, and you could still find Legends class figures.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, they're not called Legends of Cybertron, as the line was.
I think it just shortened. Yeah,
It transitioned to just Legends as of, I believe, Classics, when we ended up with like the Triptychon and the Perceptor and the Leo Convoy and all that.
Yeah, you know, originally those were designed for exactly what you said they were, like dollar stores, Walgreens, but also for emerging markets. Turkey was a big one. I remember our head marketer, Greg Lombardo, ended up going to Turkey for a week. And all that economy could really afford to import were the Legends. And that's why Movie 3 came about. And that's why you had that huge explosion of Legends figures and the different size Legend figures in the vehicles for those guys. Because those are really targeted towards those markets that wouldn't carry Deluxe or Voyager size toys.
Which kind of leads into talking about those the big Titan figures, not Titan class, but the Titan figures. You said on an earlier episode how those were actually designed for and intended for like Latin American markets and places like that.
Yeah, a lot of those Latin American markets have figures that are as basic as that, and that's part of the toy culture of those markets. I used to live in Venezuela, down in South America, and we had figures, jumbo machinders, stuff like that. And we would get other characters that were created to be in that style of articulation, where the arms would just move, maybe the head would turn. But it seems that Well, let me back up. So Hasbro ended up making an Optimus and a Bumblebee for those markets, and then realizing, well, we have the tools, so we might as well put them out here. I think they found that they were at a good price point, and you're kind of tricking kids almost, because they're getting the character they want in a large scale. It doesn't really transform or anything, but it's just that character in a large scale, and kids use their imagination. And I think production-wise, those things don't cost a whole lot to produce, hence the lower price points, and I think it was kind of a no-brainer to expand that line out to Star Wars and Marvel as well.
And it's not aimed at us collectors. It's aimed at young kids that, it helps them. It's cheap for the parents, and it helps imagination, I guess, is the best way to put it. Now, the Legends class, which I guess you could say it transformed. See what I did there? Into the Legion class. Again, a name change, but essentially the function of the class remains the same, and it is probably, in my opinion, the most important size class. You get a fully transformable figure that is on most accounts, a passable representation of the character that you see in the comics or television show. And fully transformable. It's a good representation, and it's inexpensive. A parent like me, if I were to have a son or a daughter that wanted a Transformer, which, my girlfriend, her daughter, the other day, we were in a store and she walked in, and we were walking in, and she says, "Can I get a Transformer?" And I looked at her and I said, "Yes," because, what did I get her? I got her Fix-It. She absolutely adores this toy, so.
Now, the thing about Legends, about that size class figure, is it's a little annoying because you have opportunities where you can put the entire cast at that small scale for that small price point.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can put the characters that are actually in that smaller scale in there as well, and it makes me want to go out and get it, like Fix It. I have that size class with my R&D deluxes. For the movie, you had
Wheelie.
You had even like a Ravage.
Yeah.
Like they were cool. So because they were in scale with the other guys. I miss the era when the smaller guys just lived at that smaller price point. And unfortunately, we don't live in that era anymore. And now you have just about every core character, you see them in the deluxe scale now. And only those more important characters make it to a Voyager or a Leader class.
Well, it's much like the Combiner Wars. You have like Power Glide, who is a great character. Combiner Wars Power Glide in and of itself is a great toy, but he's not a deluxe. He's basically relegated to being a target master for Superion now, you know, and I don't care for that, but at the same time, I do get what you're saying, you know, how I miss the days whenever this size class was mainly four figures like this that were intended to be a small character that goes along with your larger ones. I agree with you there. What about you, Hank? What's your, in your opinion, is the most important size class and why?
I would say deluxe. I guess deluxe in that sense was somewhere in between. Like there was a period where you only could get deluxes when I think about it in generations. They didn't really go for Voyagers. They didn't go for Ultras. Deluxe was the standard, and you know they did really interesting things. Like if you look at War for Cybertron, Optimus Prime, he had some really cool like gimmicks in him as himself. Like if you when you're extending out his legs, you notice like shutters coming down to block off the gaps, you know, that's cool stuff. You just wouldn't think they would do something with something that small. And don't get me wrong, I think the other sizes are really important, especially like Legion/Legend size, because you know they're good ways to sell the figures that are tiny to kids who you know they're based off their own pocket money. You know they want to buy something cheap. But deluxes, I think, is still the best kind of representation for Transformers that say I can get and have it displayed in my house, and my wife won't strangle me at night because there's too many toys sitting around.
Well, and here's another thing too about the new with Combiner Wars, they're not Legend, I guess they're Legion class is what they're called now. The smaller guys like Blackjack and those guys, the Rodimus, Power Glide.
I think they're back to being called Legend class for those.
Are they Legend?
I'm pretty sure.
To me, the terms are interchangeable. I mean, you know, if you're going to change it, you know, from one to the other, they've been both of them have referred to the same size. Same class. Now, granted, these toys are slightly larger than, you know, these. Say like the I'm holding up the Prime Legion class.
Would you say maybe more of a Commander class, then?
Yeah, they're more of a Cyberverse Commander. Yeah, Cyberverse Commander class. Even though they're more of a Legends. They're referred to as Legends. But one of the things that I think that makes them important as well is, dare I say it again, scale. I love the fact that I've got like Windcharger and Optimus Prime and Rodimus and all those, and then you put them next to Titan Metroplex. And, you know, I mean, I've taken pictures with Titan Metroplex holding Optimus Prime in the palm of his hand. And I'm like, to me, that is like the perfect scale, you know, as far as a fully transforming toy. I mean, if you go by the game and original Metroplex and everything, Prime should be even smaller and be like an ant in Metroplex's hand. But to have a playable toy that interacts with a much larger playable toy, that Legends class is like that happy zone. You know, you've got playability, you've got accuracy of depiction of character, and you've got affordability. I think there's the three most important things whenever you're talking about size classes. Now, you know, affordability, you get away from affordability the more expensive a toy is, but I think the more expensive a toy is also derivative of who is that toy aimed after. Titan Devastator, honestly. Yes, I'm sure there's plenty of kids that's actually going to get a Titan Devastator, but let's be real here. It's the fans and collectors that are clamoring for that toy and are more willing to spend $150 to $200 on a really large toy.
And I think that speaks as to why I haven't seen any Titan Devastator commercials on TV for kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
Collectors know about it. Collectors are going to get it. And well, with the internet, kids today, they don't necessarily need a commercial on TV to find out about a certain product. So I hope there are some children that are able to get some Devastators this year and that they don't all go to collectors for the holidays.
I agree. I'm trying to see if I can find it here.
Well, I got my Devastator at Captured Prey. But I have yet to ever see a Devastator in the wild at Brick and Mortar.
I know where six are on the shelf right now.
I see them shelf warming until the holidays.
Yeah.
I've got a Kmart that has Insecticon shelf warming at full price.
There was a meme somebody posted shortly after Titan Devastator was unveiled, and it was to me is like perfect. It took the Hasbro official image, somebody showing this kid holding up Titan Devastator and attaching the arm and looking at it with wonder, and they actually replaced it with a grown man looking. And I'm like, that is the most accurate depiction of what that toy represented, in my opinion. I mean, it's just perfect. Yeah. Now let's talk about. I mean, now that we've been talking about the Titan class, that is probably. Titan classes. We've been talking about it more and more the last couple of years. I mean, whenever Titan Metroplex came about, there was really nothing that compared to it. Now we've got a Devastator that's in that Titan class. Next year we're getting Fortress Maximus. You know, I think it's becoming more of. I don't think it's something that we're going to get like 10 figures of every year, maybe one or two. But I still think it's an important new addition to the what role does Titan class play?
Well, I think Titan class is an easy way to get the younger consumer into that higher price point. Yes, there's a lot of collectors out there who will get Devastator, but if you took Devastator apart and you gave it to a kid is going to enjoy it just as much as an adult will. And I'm pretty sure the same is true. For Metroplex, I would say that, it would be one a year or one every other year, seeing how we just had Devastator and now Fort Max is coming. It might be one every year. You're going to have one every year because you got to carry it through the holiday season. And you're not going to have a big item like that come out like halfway through the year that's not going to carry forward to the holidays. So I would say it's one a year. But I'm still hoping for a Metro Titan. I don't know if it'll ever happen. But
now, go ahead, Hank.
So talking about Metro Titan, one of the guys on the Australian forums that I go to took apart a second Metroplex and repainted it to look like Metro Titan. And it is the most glorious, gorgeous thing I've ever seen.
Do you actually have screen share of that?
Pictures? I'll go look it up. I'll get you guys keep talking about. Okay. I'll go look for the photos. Well,
now, Rick, you were actually in on the development of Titan Metroplex, were you not?
A little bit.
Now, what was Hasbro's view on bringing in such a large figure? Was it intended to be like a playset class, or I mean, of course, Devastator isn't a playset, but I mean, was it originally thought of as something that, hey, we could plug it in as a playset?
I made him a playset.
The original thought was, what is the marketing opportunity for Fall of Cybertron? And the opportunity that Fall of Cybertron presented was the Combaticons, so creating combining figures there for Bruticus, but also Metroplex. And I remember there's kind of like a moment where everyone kind of just realized in the room once we saw the first footage of Metroplex that
you had to have a gigantic.
We need to make a Metroplex. We need to look at this. You know what it was? It was the part where he transforms and he holds Optimus in his hand and he says Metroplex heeds the call of the Prime or something to that effect. And that was the moment when everyone kind of in the room just kind of realized like this could be that moment where we make that $100 figure.
That soundbite is actually in the toy too.
There, I haven't plugged the batteries into mine.
Yeah,
it's I'm anti-battery. But yeah, so we had talked about doing other characters at the time. No Decepticons were on the table. It was Fort Max, Omega Supreme. I had pushed for Metro Titan to be the San Diego Comic-Con figure. I remember that the marching order for that Metroplex was, it has to be bigger than Fort Max. It just has to be the largest Transformer ever made so far. I was very worried it was going to come out looking like that Exo suit from Transformers Prime for the Legion figures. And I'm very happy with what we got, and looking forward to Fort Max. Yeah. I wish Devastator had a few more tweaks on him, or should I say elbows and guns. Yeah.
Well, I understand why, but at the same time, I think it's sad that, you know, Japan's getting it, but we're not. I would like to have seen like a collector's edition brought out here in the United States that was like basically the Japanese version with the elbows and everything. Maybe available only on HasbroToyShop.com or something. I think that's an avenue that is sorely misused. And then maybe mass retail be the one that we got, you know, that's cheaper, lower price, you know, cheaper, less parts.
Yeah. The problem with that is that when Takara does something like that, where they add extra tooling and Hasbro wants to use it, they have to retroactively go pay for that tooling in order to get the rights from Takara to use it. So making it as a online exclusive may not be financially sound, but I think for Comic-Con that's where that figure should have lived with all the extra tooling.
Yeah.
All right. I've got the link that Hang is actually shared here. Let me pull up this here share. Present to everyone. And there you go, Rick, Metro Titan.
Yeah, I do have an extra Metroplex in my collection. I'm thinking of paying someone to get it painted one day when I have money. There are a couple people who have customized the Metroplex, and that one's a good one right there.
One of the better ones I've seen. I've seen it in the flesh. If you want to say it, I've seen it in the flesh. It is glorious. Like, MBot's done a fantastic job with putting that together.
That is a fantastic looking toy.
Well, you know what, Duran, we don't have a Metro Titan. So what did I do? Because I wanted one on my shelf. I went out and bought something from a company
called
Make Toys,
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't Utopia. It was the Dystopia. Yeah, and I have that on my shelf now.
Yeah, and that goes to what we talked about on earlier episodes was you know, third party, there are no size classes. You know, basically, unless you're talking about Masterpiece, there's some that are supposed to be more of a Masterpiece style, and then some that are intended to be more of fit in with Generations and, you know, Voyagers or Deluxes. But that's that goes back to what I said once before. The reason I buy certain third-party toys is to fill a hole that we either can't or won't get through an official meme. You know, I don't think it's or if it's a character that I absolutely love. For example, I love Devastator. You know, I bought TSC Hercules, love the toy, and I also bought Titan Devastator, love the toy, because I love the character. You know, and they're both great representations of it. You know, so I totally agree. You know, we didn't get a Titan Titan Metro Titan. Titan Metro Titan. Yeah, I think that's why I was getting tongue tied there. So, you know, getting Dystopia was, you know, and I think it's good, even though he's not as tall as Titan Metroplex, he's got the size that you would expect from a toy that is meant to represent a fortress or a city. And, you know, since obviously Hasbro has no interest in making a Metro Titan, you know, there's an avenue, and you're actually getting a totally new and different tooling than Titan Metroplex, and he has a nemesis that isn't just a repaint of himself. You know, I kind of like that idea. So
he's considerably shorter, but you know, Metro Titan Dystopia, I'll just, you know, punch him in the groin or something.
Yeah, it's, well, even Titan Devastator shorter than Titan Metroplex. So, I mean, I think it's more of above a certain size class that Titans kind of fit in.
Supreme.
Yeah. Now, let's kind of wrap up our talk on the size classes, and then going in. I know it's kind of a disjointed segue again. That seems to be the motif of the night. But you know, we were talking about filling in holes in our collection. Yeah. Yeah, Gaby. Filling in holes in our collection with third party. I do have a question on here from let's see here, on Twitter at Parapex78 Autobot Soldier. He asks, "What do you guys think about the BotCon no third party in hotel rooms ban?" So, kind of want to get a roundabout thought on that, and then we'll talk about that briefly, and then we'll wrap up. But any closing thoughts on actual size classes before we go into that?
No.
Okay. Let's talk. Let's kind of one at a time here.
Okay. I'll go first, 'cause I'm obviously the most handsome person here.
I disagree with that, but
you know. You are some hand.
You're still guapo.
I think the older I'm getting, I'm starting to dislike the cookie cutter feel that I'm getting, and forcing figures who shouldn't necessarily be in a certain size class fit into that size class. I like to have a difference in scale. I like my figures to feel that the bigger the figure, the higher the price point he should be. Grimlock, for example, don't really care for a deluxe RID Grimlock or a deluxe RID Optimus. I want those figures to be as cool as the deluxe versions, not the Power Morpher type ones that we have at a larger scale. So cookie cutter thing, I think I'm kind of over it.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It's... For example, you know, like I said earlier, Power Glide. To me, that's a toy. Yes, he was originally a small basic toy in Generation 1, but I think he is an important enough character to warrant at least a deluxe class or a Voyager class of that toy. I actually like the fact that we got a Voyager class version of him in Universe. Mm-hmm. I was one of the proponents of that. I know a lot of people say, oh, he shouldn't be so big. I'm like, well, if you think about his alt form and everything, and on the show, he wasn't like this little, tiny little guy next to Optimus Prime. I mean, yeah, he was small, but he wasn't, you know, micro-sized. Again, we're going into scale, but Jim, you had a closing thought.
I'm trying to remember what it was.
Okay. How about you, Hank?
I still think that – I think what really cheeses me off, I guess, is the price of plastics and stuff being built. It feels like I'm paying more, especially living in Australia. I'm paying more for stuff that seems to be getting – seems to feel cheaper in my hands, especially from the American side of things. I mean, but for some reason, I feel like I paid $25. I paid $25 for a deluxe when Drift came out, and Drift feels really solid. I'm buying a $25 figure for Combiner Wars. Don't get me wrong, good figures, but for some reason feels loose and slightly cheaper than I thought it would be back only a few years ago. I mean, I guess I understand that it's more expensive to make toys. Actually, I don't understand it, but you know. I'm paying for the product. I kind of don't like it when I feel ripped off, and that's sometimes why I don't mind the deluxe, because it's in the middle there. You know, you're not paying too much for something that kind of feels cheap in your hand, but once it gets bigger and large scale, and sometimes when you look at it, some of the Voyagers are really simplistic transformation, and they're not that fantastic. You know, I feel like a deluxe would be better. That's why I prefer sticking to my deluxes if I can help it. Oh, don't get me wrong, I'll still buy Titan stuff. So, you know, I'll still buy Titan class stuff if I can afford it. But yeah, I reckon deluxes are the way to go now.
Yeah. I bet, did you ever get your thought back, Jim?
Never did.
Never did? Yeah.
Nah.
Come back, thought. Come back. All right. Let's tackle this little thing here. And I do want to state before we go into this this topic. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, and also don't want to come across as hating on BotCon or anything like that, but it is a negative thing that that is being talked about amongst the fandom. I know there are people who are proponents of this because they are against third party, but again, there are a great number of fans and obviously a vast majority of fans that, and collectors that support third party, or else third parties wouldn't exist because people wouldn't be giving them the money. BotCon has released a statement in their brochure that we talked about at the top of the show, and I'm going to quote it here. Please do not bring products that may infringe on Hasbro-owned intellectual property. In addition, please do not bring any items for sale during room-to-room trading that may infringe on Hasbro-owned intellectual property. Products that may infringe on intellectual property rights of others are not welcome in the premise at any time. Violation of this policy could result in the expulsion from the event and the hotel property. People will just stay at a different hotel for room-to-room trading, apparently. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts on this? Anybody have any thoughts?
No, sir. I don't like it.
I'm going to excuse myself from this topic of conversation because this could be its own show, and I would even recommend that we hold this off until after BotCon.
Yeah.
So far away.
I agree. I agree with you. My statement on this, I don't agree with it, mainly because I do buy third-party products happily. BotCon is – and here's why. BotCon is meant to be for the fans. And I am a fan of Transformers and transforming robots. I don't care whether or not it infringes on Hasbro's rights. That's not my concern. What concerns me is the fact that I actually like the toy and I'm going to buy it, you know? And I want to be able to go to a convention and buy these toys. I have serious doubts whether or not Hasbro is as concerned about it as we are led to believe. I also think that it is impossible for Fun Publications to completely police that. I mean, the statement that products that may infringe on intellectual property rights of others are not welcomed on the premise at any time. So what you're saying is that if somebody brings a third party, a single individual brings a third party figure to sell or trade, and somebody from FunPub happens to notice it, you know, you're out of here. Are you going to really have somebody who paid you money and possibly flew from Hang flew from Australia to BotCon, and he brought, Hegemon that he wants to sell to Tim Smith, and somebody from FunPub found out about it. And are they going to go up to Hang, who paid thousands of dollars to fly over here and go to this convention, tell him to get out? I don't think that is in the best interest of the fandom or the convention. My opinion. I honestly think it's picking nits. And if Hasbro is as concerned about third party infringement and everything, they would seek more legal repercussions against the companies themselves rather than the people who buy them. Mm-hmm.
You know, I swear somebody wrote an article, like not an article, but like their thoughts on this. And one of them brings up a really good point that Hasbro / Takara could be using the third party businesses as a way to test the waters as to whether a character would be popular. So mm-hmm. if people are willing to buy those third party figures, then Hasbro and Takara goes, well, we might as well make a better version that is, you know, belongs to the original company, and people would still buy it. That's my assumption as to why.
A case in point.
Devastated.
And here's a general question any of you guys can answer. Do you think we would have a Titan Devastator right now if it weren't for the influence of third party?
No.
I reckon we wouldn't even have Combiner Wars if it wasn't for third party.
I'll disagree. I think we would have had a Titan Devastator. What I don't think we would have had was Combiner Wars.
Fair enough.
Exactly. That's a good one. What about the size of Titan Metroplex? And this ties into our topic tonight. Do you think that Titan Metroplex is as big as he is as a proverbial middle finger to giant third-party toys?
Absolutely not.
No?
Absolutely not. He was made for a specific price point, and that had nothing to do with what anyone else was ever doing.
Okay.
He was made to fit in with a marketing opportunity, which was the Fall of Cybertron game.
Okay, that's fair enough. But
as for the third party thing, I just got to thinking. They're introducing what may turn into some kind of slippery slope, because they mention, you know, bringing anything that might infringe on intellectual property of others. Okay.
Does that include T-shirts?
Well, see, I was gonna say, you know, they're focusing on, you know, in theory, you know, toys, you know, transforming robot toys that might happen to look like, you know, other, you know, Hasbro transforming robot toys. But that's toy competing with toy. What about artists who get paid for their artwork there at their table? Okay, maybe artist gets an artist table and doesn't work for IDW or doesn't work for, you know, Hasbro to make packaging art. Would that be a conflict of interest to the other making artwork of, you know, say Ultra Magnus or Lyo Convoy, you know, or someone like that. I mean, it could get into any number of things progressively beyond that.
I think at this point we should leave it rhetorical and see how it all plays out. But what would be interesting is, what if these third-party companies took some of their new products and just entered them into the custom contest?
Hmm.
How would you know what's a third-party thing versus what's an actual custom?
Yeah, some That's of these right. customs, the customs blow you away, yeah.
That well, would be Titan-class trolling.
Yeah, my next statement is going to be could be possibly construed as trolling, but it's an honest question. Okay, reading this statement, this official statement from BotCon, products that may infringe on intellectual property rights of others are not welcomed on the premise at any time. Okay, does that mean that every vendor that is carrying a G1 Jazz is going to be kicked out because that Jazz is an unlicensed representation of a Porsche?
If it's generation one?
Of a generation one Jazz or a generation one Sideswipe.
Well, the generation one figures were licensed when they were manufactured.
No, they were not.
Nope.
Really?
They were not. And they are still not.
Hmm.
Now the masterpieces are, they are officially licensed representations of those cars. But Generation 1 Jazz, Generation 1 Sideswipe, cars like that, Generation 1 Wheeljack, they were not licensed, and they still are not.
I think that's another thing where, let's keep that rhetorical. What it will be interesting to see is who's making the determination of what counts as third party and what doesn't. And what legal standpoint can they use to claim XYZ is infringing on their property?
Well, I mean, the statement is, though, products that infringe on intellectual property rights of others. So you're talking
but
about
whose intellectual property?
Exactly. Whose intellectual property are we only going to protect Hasbro's intellectual property? Well, what about the intellectual properties of BMW, of Porsche, of these car companies that aren't paid for the likenesses of their vehicles, whether it's a vintage toy or not?
There's something else.
And I'm not trying to stir up a hornet's nest here. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. You know, because if you're going to complain about one type of intellectual property theft, quote unquote, well, then it's a teapot calling the kettle black. And I agree with Rick. I want to see how this plays out. I want to stand
that
back.
That question is a good question for someone to ask at the panel.
Here's something else too. What's to stop somebody from going up to, say, even Big Bad Toy Store or whatever other major retail, maybe even Hasbro Toy Shop booth, and saying that Titan Class Devastator looks an awful lot like TSC Hercules?
No, that's important.
It didn't specify.
But it doesn't work the other way around.
It doesn't.
Whoever holds the copyright.
Hercules came out before Titan Class Devastator.
No, but it won't matter because it's based on Devastator.
Jim, come on.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. You know, if you're going to police it for one reason and say it's for this one reason, then I think it's only fair to cover the whole gamut. Now, you know, I mean, there's official product, regardless of whether or not you acknowledge it or not. If you're a Hasbro/Takara fanboy through and through, which, you know, I love official product. I in no way do not support, I support official product. I also support unofficial product. But I am also being real in that, you know, there is official product out there that infringes on other people's copyrights. And if you're going to police a dealer room floor for toys that infringe on Hasbro's copyright, then you should, in fairness, police for toys that Hasbro has produced and Takara has produced that infringe on other people's copyrights, because that is doing the exact same thing that, you know, Hasbro or, well, BotCon, and saying that Hasbro is telling them, hey, we don't want these toys there. I'm wondering how much of Hasbro input into BotCon saying, hey, we need to nix this. I wonder if they're actually behind it, or if it's strictly a BotCon thing. But the, you know, I'm just trying to be real here and fair. If you're going to police for one, you need to police for the other. And that's all I'm saying. All right, guys.
Somebody really should bring it up at one of the panels, though, just for kicks and grins, just to see what they say. Put them on the spot, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good idea. See how they defend their actions.
Mm-hmm. But, you know...
excuse me, sir. You need to come with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least I know if I get kicked out of the con, I don't have far to go home. So... Well, guys, you guys have any closing thoughts, even on the size classes? I hated to kind of end on that down note, but a question, you know, is a question posed by a listener, and it's a very pertinent topic right now. But I agree with Rick. Let's look at it after the con and see how it pans out. You know, but you guys have any closing thoughts or comments?
I do.
Okay.
Upcoming Fortress Maximus in Titans Return. I'm left wondering, okay, Metroplex, when he came out for War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron in Generations, was towering over Fortress Maximus by game much. Will this new Fortress Maximus be taller than the Metroplex, even if just slightly?
Probably will be.
I mean, I'm reminded of like an old Tex Avery cartoon where it was like a cat and I think a dog or a mouse, and each one kept getting progressively larger and larger until they were both like standing on the planet.
Hmm.
And I wonder
that's
if
that's one of those questions, Jim, that just makes me think, shut up.
You said final thoughts.
Just shut up.
You asked for thoughts from my brain, so.
So yeah. Speaking of planets... final thoughts. I'm really hoping for more Titan size figures, including a certain planet.
Yes.
Alderaan.
Gobatron.
Nebulous?
Alderaan. You could be a Nebulous
turns into a giant headmaster that is actually a full size human transformer.
No, I tell you, this is what they should do. They'll make Titan Master Cybertron, and then the third parties that come along, and they'll make the two pieces that'll make the Apple Core from GoBots. Right? There you go. Another million-dollar idea from Rick Alvarez that won't go anywhere.
There you go. Well, guys, it's been a good show here. We've had a lot of interesting points to point out. Maybe listeners hadn't considered some of the things that we talked about, and some listeners may not have even known about some of the things that we talked about. Some of our listeners that aren't aware of how things were classed back in Generation 1 or lack thereof, and how size classes have come into large play of what we have on the shelf today and dictate pretty much shelf space. Although if you go to my local Walmart, you'd be kind of going, does anybody ever come in this store? I wonder if anybody ever comes in this store. But yeah. Well, guys, it's been another TFYLP. Check out next week. Hopefully be some great information on holiday buying guide. Another programming note, coming up in December, we're tentatively got it planned for December 19th, a special episode the day after Star Wars officially comes out. We're not going to be broadcasting on the 18th because of that reason. We kind of anticipate a lot of people going to see this movie about lightsabers and yeah, Darth Vader and all that stuff.
Dark side, something destiny.
But it will also be on the 19th, will also be our last live show of 2015. We're going to take a 2-week hiatus, as we always do, to allow for the members of our cast to enjoy the holidays with family, travel, and everything. And then we'll return after the first of the year with all new live episodes. I do plan on trying to put together a pre-recorded episode for possibly Christmas week. But that's still in the works. But on the 19th, we are looking to do an episode where we're doing a Secret Santa gift exchange amongst all the cast of TFYLP. We've drawn names and cast lots, and we're going to see who gets what. And it's sure to be fun, and lots of great times. We're going to open up our gifts on air, and possibly give insights and thoughts on our gifts, as well as talk about our favorite toys and least favorite toys of 2015. So check that out. That'll be coming next month. So a lot of great things coming up, guys. Thank you all, Rick, Jim, Hank. We will see you next time on Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. This is Duran signing off.
Good night.
Good night to you guys.
We're finally getting Fort Max.
Fort Max.
Yay.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.